Hey everybody, this is Ricky Warwick from Black Star Writers, and you're listening to the Rock Solid Podcast.
Make me a deal and make it good for me. I won't get full of myself, I can't afford to be. This is small town music, this is big town music. He's ahead of his time, you know, but he can't use it. If only he could prove it. Well, tomorrow's just a song away.
Hey everybody, welcome to Rock Solid, the comedy podcast for all things music, both new and classic. I'm Pat Francis, and joining me today, it's a couple of firsts happening today. First of all, my guest is lead singer from Black Star Riders. His name is Ricky Warwick, and one of the first, Ricky, go ahead, say hello.
Hey, how's it going?
Ricky, you are our first musical musician guest that has been back to the show.
Oh, cool. Thank you. I didn't know that.
Very exciting. And you've always been one of our favorites.
We've had
so many people on, but when people would ask Kyle and I who were some of your favorite guests, it's always like the same people at the top. It's Terry Nunn from Berlin, Ricky Warwick, Kenny Aronoff. I mean, there's just something you guys just bring you guys are just nice people to the core, and it comes out when we meet you, and
it came out
when we would do the show. So I'm just kissing your butt a little bit.
But it's not
a lie either, because when people ask us, you guys are like our top three. So we've had many great people, but you guys always make it to the
Thank
top.
Thank you so much.
Our other first is we've never done this before, where we do a track by track by an artist's album. That is, when you're listening to this, this album will be released tomorrow. And the album is the new Black Star Riders album. It's their fourth album. It's called Another State of Grace. And I'm so happy that you guys are still making music. You guys are on a 2-year cycle almost. It's 2013, 15, 17, and now 19. And it's like the old school days. You guys are, you're on a label, Nuclear Blast.
The whole time.
And what's it like in 2019? Does Nuclear Blast, do they fund the making of the album? Do you guys fund it and they just distribute it? How's it go?
Yes, they do. It's very much like old school, as you were saying, Pat. We're in a very unique position, I guess, in rock and roll, where our albums have done fairly well and they've recouped. We know we don't get too big for our boots. We know that we've got to work within certain boundaries, and we've got budgets that we've got to stick with.
Sure.
So we do that, and Nuclear Blast have fronted the albums, given us the recording budget, not millions, but enough still to work with a great producer in a good studio and do it the way everybody used to do it 25 years ago. Now, I think back in that day, if your albums weren't recouping, obviously the record companies would still bankroll you for 2 or 3 albums just to see where you're at. That isn't the case so much anymore. So we're very lucky.
You got to produce. You got to put the great stuff out there.
We're lucky. It's a testimony to the fans out there. They've bought the records enough to enable us to keep making records. It's as simple as that.
Also, it's not, it's like a real professional affair with you guys, because the packaging's great.
Yeah.
The band photos are great.
Thank you.
The art direction's great. I have the same feeling when I get a Black Star Riders album that I did when I was a kid, and you would get the album and you would open it up. Even if it's just the CD, the CDs are full with tons of pictures of you guys and lyrics, and it's everything that you want, and you guys are doing it right. It really makes me feel, and you and I, we're like the same age, you're very close to it, but it makes me feel like a high school kid opening up these Black Star Riders albums. Yeah, I love it so much.
Well, we feel the same way, and we have a very much a gang mentality in Black Star Riders. It may be the oldest gang in town, but we still have that gang mentality, and I know Scott Gorham and myself are very passionate about, making sure the stuff's good quality, making sure that the fans get their money's worth. And everybody in the band is. And it's important to us to do the colored vinyl and the gate full sleeve, because that's what we were excited about. And I think genuinely that's never gone away. I mean, a great example was just yesterday. My youngest daughter is a huge Billie Eilish fan. And so am I.
So is my daughter, well, my 14-year-old.
She's amazing. And I took her to Urban Outfitters. And it was sort of a back-to-school treat. And the one thing she wanted was the Billie Eilish vinyl.
Yep, it's right there. They sell them there at Urban Outfitters.
And it was a gatefold sleeve. It was orange vinyl. And she opened it in the car on the way back. And she was... She's like, oh my God, Dad, look, the lyrics are in there. And look at, she's holding. And I was like...
It's the best.
I was like... I almost teared up, you know, yeah. because I was like, that's what it was like for me when I was your age, Pepper. Yep. You know, that's, isn't that how cool it is? That's so much better than just clicking a button. You know, I said, yeah, it's great, it's convenient. And, you know, obviously when you have a party, there's not 1,700 albums lying over the right. floor next day. Right. But just to see her face and for her to realize what it was like for us when we were that age, when we had to get on the bus and go to the record store, but then we had this amazing thing. You know, I don't think it's ever gone away. And I think...
And it's making a comeback, too.
I firmly believe that, you know, and I think that's why we do what we do in Black Star Riders.
And it's and this thing's Another State of Grace. It's coming out. There's a deluxe edition. Like you said, there's a vinyl. There's a colored vinyl.
Yes.
You guys are doing it. It's great.
Well, I've got to give some kudos to Nuclear Blast as well, who are very... a huge part of that and always are very up for, you know, the special limited editions and colored vinyls.
With the digi books, all that stuff.
They're really into that. And that's one of the great things about being on that label.
Well, then you guys are in the right, you're at the right label because if they're, because a lot of, you know, if you want to call it veteran artists, a lot of places would just go, we'll put it out digitally and on a CD and
cut the corners,
but not with this stuff. And it's fantastic.
Thank you.
I want to give everyone a little bit, of a rundown on if you don't know Black Star Riders, this band came out of the touring version of Thin Lizzy. And then, and you guys paying tribute to the music of Thin Lizzy, Scott Gorham, classic lineup member of Thin Lizzy. And so at one point you guys were going to go in and decided you're going to make a new Thin Lizzy album. You're going to call it Thin Lizzy.
Yep.
But then at the ninth hour, I assume, you guys thought, you know what?
We saw the light, we wised up.
You were just like, without Phil, we can't call this Thin Lizzy.
That's exactly what it was.
I think the last time you were here, you said everyone kind of had that feeling, but no one was saying it. And then whoever said it, and then everyone agreed.
Yeah, it was all our sort of come to Jesus moment in the room, you know. And it was one of those things where, you know, in my head, I'm going, oh man, I'm going to be on the new Thin Lizzy record. It's going to say record. And my heart's going, what are you doing?
Right.
You're an idiot. You know, playing these songs live and keeping the songs alive is one thing, but recording without the great man, step too far. And I think it all sort of dawned on us instantaneously that this maybe wasn't the wisest thing to be doing, that it was possibly sacrilege and it was, you know, not right. Just wasn't right. There you go.
Yeah, when you have someone like Phil who is so so iconic, so legendary, and so hooked to that Thin Lizzy name, it's just, it's kind of hard to do that. I know a lot of bands, they lose a lead singer and they gain a lead singer, but it's still like the core original members with the new lead singer. I don't have any problem with that, but this was a totally different thing.
Yeah, you know, when it's like, I don't think, when I close my eyes, I don't see Thin Lizzy with me singing.
Mm-hmm, right.
I see Thin Lizzy with Phil.
With Phil.
And that's the way it should always be. The guy is irreplaceable. I would never dream in a billion years of trying to stand in those shoes.
Even though if you listen to you sing a Thin Lizzy song and you close your eyes... You can hear Phil in there, which is pretty cool.
Well, he was a huge influence on me. Growing up as a kid in Belfast in Ireland, you know, Lizzy were it. You know, they were the band.
And you got to see them?
No, I got to see Phil in Grand Slam.
Okay.
The band he formed after Thin Lizzy, sadly, right before he actually passed away. Never got to see him in Thin Lizzy, which is a great shame. But yeah, you know, they were just such a huge influence on me. And Phil, to me, is the iconic. Probably, in my opinion, the greatest rock and roll frontman ever was. He had it all.
Yeah, it's pretty
in
great.
Abundance, you know.
Yeah, charisma. So,
yeah,
just
and you know, you're damned if you do. Like people say, oh, you know, you sing those songs, you sound too much like Phil, or you sing those songs, you don't sound enough like Phil. You know, you can't
please everyone.
No, but I just want to do. How would I want to hear those Thin Lizzy songs? Yeah. I'd want to hear them as close to the original
sure,
as I possibly
yeah.
could. So that's what I try and do, you know.
Well, I think you're doing. I think you're doing a great job.
Thank you.
I mean, my dream would be to see. A Thin Lizzy show, but I know in America that's hard to come by. It's not cost effective for you guys to
not
do a Thin
really,
Lizzy
no.
show.
No, and you know we don't do that many of them anymore.
No.
It's just you know we just did a couple a few weeks ago. We did three festivals over in Europe, and that's the first Thin Lizzy shows in 3 years. And it'll probably be two or three years before there is any more, if there is any more.
And,
you know?
And who's in that when you just do those shows? Who's in that band?
It's
currently?
Very celebratory. You know, we still have obviously Scott Gorham there,
yes.
and we have Darren Wharton, who was the keyboard
which
player.
Is great because that's another someone from the Thin Lizzy family tree. So
absolutely.
That's nice.
Darren joined in when he did the Chinatown album. Which I believe was way back in 1980. And then this time around, we had Damon Johnson, who was in Black Star Riders.
Yes.
And
he came out for the Thin Lizzy show.
The Thin Lizzy show, so Damon's still there. On bass, we had Troy Sanders from Mastodon.
Okay.
Which was incredible.
You guys have had a, Tom Hamilton was in that slot.
Yeah.
From Marco Aerosmith, Mendoza. Marco Mendoza.
Marco was there for a long time. Even when they were going out with John Sykes singing, Marco was playing bass. And then we had Scott Travis from Priest on drums.
Judas Amazing drummer.
And I mean, what a band. And it sounded incredible.
That's
great. You know, we did the whole The Black Rose album in its entirety.
Which is my favorite Thin Lizzy album.
Me too.
I love that album.
Yeah, me too. So we did all that in its entirety, you know, which was unbelievable to get to play songs like, you know, even My Sarah, Toughest Street in Town, you know, Get Out of Here. Songs that Scott had never really, didn't even play that much back
then. So he had to learn them.
We had to do a lot of homework. But it was phenomenal, great band, and it's just a celebration of Thin Lizzy. Nobody's trying to replace anything here. We're trying to keep the songs.
It's just a tribute. It's a celebration,
A celebration of what a great band they are and they were, you know.
And the audience was super receptive, I'm sure.
Amazing.
Because they want to hear those songs too.
Of course, yeah.
So what was my next thing? What did I want to move on to? Okay, so first album came out in 2013.
Yeah.
It, All Hell Breaks Loose. Mm-hmm. And Kevin Shirley produced that. Kevin Shirley, who's worked with Iron Maiden and Journey and Aerosmith. And then you had The Killer Instinct, produced by Nick. And I never know how to say his last name.
Raskolnikov.
Raskolnikov. He produced, and he's worked with Foo Fighters and Rush. And he produced then the next two.
He did.
Now, the new album is produced by a guy named Jay Rustin. I don't know who. Tell me about Jay, because I don't know that name.
Jay just lives right down the street from where we're actually.
Just right down. That's,
right down the street.
That's hysterical.
Yeah, I know. Jay mixed the last two Black Star Riders album.
So he's familiar with the sound and everything.
Yeah, very much so. But he does, you know, he's probably primarily known as an engineer mixer more in his production work, although he has produced Steel Panther, Anthrax, The Donnas.
Oh, okay. Well, that's...
He's done a lot of pop stuff as well. Mm-hmm. And we just love Jay. And just, you know, with the lineup changes... going into the fourth record, we didn't want to record in Nashville. We felt we'd done that.
Mm-hmm.
We just felt it was time to make a change on the producer side, record in Los Angeles, which we're excited to do because two of us live here. Scott's obviously from here.
Yeah.
And Christian Martucci, our guitar player, is just up in Oregon. So it just made sense to come to LA. And we recorded a great studio here in the Valley called Sphere Studios.
Not too far from here either.
Nope, not too far at all. And had a wonderful time and a different recording experience as well. I mean,
you get to sleep in your own bed,
get to go home at night, get to get up in the morning, drop the kids at school, which maybe is a bad thing when you're when you're trying to make a record, but I loved it. I loved the whole experience and I loved working with Jay. I thought he was phenomenal, really was.
Well, he did a great job because it sounds just as good as the other albums.
Thank you.
And for me, every one of these albums, and this was the scary thing when I decided we would do this, I think Killer Instinct is better than All Hell Breaks Loose. Uh-huh. And I think Heavy Fire is better than Killer Instinct. And Heavy Fire of the three was my favorite. So now you send me the MP3s for this and I have to listen to it. And now I'm like, okay, what if I don't click with this one? What are we going to do?
Right.
But I can look you straight in the eye and tell you, this is better than Heavy Fire.
Oh, thank you.
It is unbelievable. You guys, I don't know how you guys are doing this.
Yeah.
But it's like, it's better. It sounds, all the albums sound great, but this one sounds so rocking and it's got a lot of layers to it. And, all the songs are good and top to bottom. There's not a song that I would skip on this album at all.
Yeah.
So congratulations on
thanks,
that.
Man.
I can't wait for people to hear that.
Yep.
So lineup changes real quick. Damon Johnson, he was a founding member and he just played Thin Lizzy shows with you. He's still your bud.
Yep.
There's no salacious, nothing bad. He just wanted to move on and do some solo
stuff. It's as simple as that. Knowing Damon as well as I do, about 6-7 months before he announced he was leaving, I could tell that he was going to.
Mm-hmm.
Just because I know him so well.
Yeah.
You know, we tour in Europe a heck of a lot, and that means being away 4 or 5 months out of the year in a different continent.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's home life is different. Everybody deals with it in a different way.
Yeah.
It's tough being in a band. It's tough being in a band when you're older and you've kids at colleges and schools. It's just trying to move all the pieces and make it all work. It's not easy. And I think Damon just wanted to dictate his own schedule and didn't want to do the 7-8 week tours.
Yeah.
He wanted to do 2-3 weeks and then go home. I completely understand that. You know,
because he's a dad too, right?
He's a dad too. Yeah. And like I said, everybody's situation at home is different. So he wanted to dictate his own destiny, as it were, for touring. He made a solo record, I know, which he was very passionate about. Mm-hmm. And I think he felt he wanted to give that the commitment and time to try and promote that as best he could. And, you know, Black Star Riders obviously made demands that wouldn't let him do that.
Sure.
So, and being the great guy he is, it wasn't like, hey, I'm leaving the band tomorrow. It was like, you know, he told us, we finished the Judas Priest tour, in the spring of last year, and he told us at the end of that that he wanted to move on, but said, hey, I'll stick around till the end of the year, till you get somebody else in place.
That's great.
You know, yeah, I'll do
good
the
guy.
Shows, and then when it's all good, we'll do it. So he, you know, he stuck around till November, till we got Christian Martucci, who's the new guitar player, and then we parted ways. But like you said, we're still great mates. I mean, I talk to the guy.
Yeah, because you guys go out sometimes and do these solo gigs together.
Stuff, yeah, you know.
So we'll still see you guys do those when time permits.
Absolutely, yeah, absolutely.
So the new guy is there's two new guys.
Yeah,
but Chad. How do you say his last name?
Chad Saliga. I know.
These guys' names, I can't say them. Chad Saliga, he was not on the Heavy Fire album,
no.
But he was on the tour. And I saw you guys twice on that tour, and he fits in perfectly.
Chad's amazing.
Great drummer.
Unbelievable.
Looks rock and roll, just like all you guys look.
Yep.
And you see the band photo, you go, look at this band of brothers.
Right.
I mean, you guys look great.
Oh, thank you.
So so this is his first album, though, recording with you?
This is his first time in the studio with us. And you know, it's funny talking about Chad being you, because like you said, he's been with us now for 2 years.
Yeah.
So he feels like, it just feels like he's always been part of it.
Right.
Chad is a wonderful human being, a very positive, very focused individual, always playing his drums, always practicing, which
that's
I love,
great.
You know, which is great to see. Very enthusiastic, and he turned up to record, as we all did, but he just had his homework done and just played the hell out of those songs. A lot of those tracks on Another State of Grace, the bass and drums are actually cut live. And it's usually the first or second take that we did.
So that'd be Robbie Crane on bass.
Robbie and Chad together. And, you know, we just kept everything. You know, if the odd bum note here and there, you go in and fix.
Yeah.
But pretty much those were either the first or second take of Chad's drumming. And there wasn't much overdubs going on at all between the two of them. That's how good they were. I mean, he's probably my favorite bass player in the world.
He's like a veteran now. This is his third album.
I know, right? He's old school now. But no, the two of them together, what a rhythm section. And, you know, I'm a firm believer, if you ain't got a good rhythm section, you haven't got a band.
So, yeah, you need it. You got someone holding down that bottom end for
absolutely.
Sure. I met Rob when you guys played down in Anaheim.
Yeah.
Opened for Saxon. Mm-hmm. Great show.
Thank you.
Have you guys only played SoCal like three times? I saw you at the Canyon Club, I saw you in Anaheim, and then I saw you at the
Microsoft Theater.
I saw you there. So I think I've seen you every time you come here.
Yeah.
How do we get Black Star Riders in the US more?
I mean, I know we're definitely going to tour this album next year as much as we can.
Like a headlining club tour?
Well, ideally we'd love to get on another big tour like we did with Judas
Priest. Sure, because that way people are like, who are these guys?
Exactly.
Oh my God. And then they go buy the record and all that fun stuff.
But the success of doing those Priest shows last year has enabled us now to go out and do some club shows.
Okay.
You know, because we've been in front of more people. So obviously more promoters are more interested. It's just making, you know, with the industry the way it is now, we just won't go out and lose money.
Yeah.
We just can't afford
to. You can't, no.
You know, so a tour has to make sense. You know, there's no point everybody being away from home for 6-7 weeks and come back home going, you know, hey, honey, that was really great, but
we had a blast,
but we're 20 grand in the hole. You know,
because it's just, no good.
It just doesn't, we just can't afford to do it. So it has to make sense. Look, you know, even if it breaks even, we still might consider going and doing it if we feel it's going to benefit the band, but we just can't. So that's the real thing. That's the thing that doesn't hold us back, but we have to look at that every time. I think we're now in a position where in the States where we can go and make it work.
Yeah, I think so.
And do some club shows. And certainly with this album, that's the plan, to be definitely more proactive over here.
And that lineup of you, Saxon, and Priest, I mean, that's
killer, right?
That's like a dream. And all three bands brought it. Like there was no, and I'm not real familiar with a lot of Saxon stuff, but that didn't matter because it was amazing.
Yeah, I think, you know, we were slightly, not concerned because we know how good Black Star Riders are, but we were definitely the outside guys on that in terms of where Saxon and Priest are just classic, legendary heavy metal,
absolutely
heavy metal bands. And, you know, and we're not, we're more of a hard rock band.
You are, yeah.
And I think we were like, oh, hang on a minute, how's this going to go over with the Priest and Saxon audience? But, you know, it went down a storm because they can stop by seeing that the guitars are cranked loud, we're sweating, we're playing from the soul.
Yep.
It's in your face. It's still anthemic, you know. So I think we won over a lot of fans on that tour.
Well, I got a ton more questions, but let's play. Let's get into some of the music. Let's go to track one. This is like the perfect song to kick off the album. This is so great.
Thank you.
And let's crank this one up. Like a pop rock song, dude. I mean, totally. That's amazing.
Thank you.
This now, I didn't have the songwriting credits on this, so tell me who's this song credited to. You write all the lyrics.
I write all the lyrics. I write a lot of the guitar riffs as well.
Okay, cool.
So I write a lot of the music too. But this riff is a Scott Gorham riff. Scott started playing that in the dressing room when we were on the road, and I was like, "What's that?" He's like, "Oh, it's just something I came up with." I went, "That's genius," you know.
I always like that story. It's just something I came up with. What are you talking about? Scott Gorham,
you know, he only sort of writes quality riffs.
Yeah,
he doesn't bring in a whole ton of them, but the ones he brings in are
classic.
You're like, "Oh my god, these are great!" And I said, "Scott, that's brilliant." I said, "I can hear a melody for it already." So, record it on my phone, took it away, started messing around with it at home. Got a rough sketch of the lyrics together and a melody for it, sent it to Christian Martucci, our new guitar player.
New guitars.
Christian came back with a chorus, sent it back to me with the chords for the chorus.
Wow.
And there you have it. So it's, you know, it's a Gorham Martucci Warwick collaboration. And lyrically, I wrote it about having my heart broken for the first time, which wasn't by a girl, it was by a dog. I had a little Jack Russell Terrier when I was a kid. And the dog followed me everywhere, and we were inseparable. And the dog got hit on the road one day and killed. No. And it's the first time I ever remember a sense of loss, feeling that sense of loss, having your heart broken, because I'd never experienced it before. Because I was, you know, I was 9 years old, and thankfully nobody close to me had died. And just remember how distraught and that feeling of loss. So I kind of expanded on that, and you know, wrote it about growing up with a couple of my friends that have since moved away, or a couple have passed on, sadly. And sort of saying, you know, I'm still thinking about you and still thinking about the times we had growing up in Northern Ireland when it was crazy and the troubles were going on. But we made the best of it and we had a laugh and we used to get into trouble and all this kind of thing. And, you know, it's kind of, you know, I'm staring at the moon thinking about you and hoping you're okay and that kind of thing.
Yeah. So. I don't even think I said the title. That was called Tonight the Moonlight.
Yeah.
Tonight the Moonlight. That kicks off the album. And I just love those. I love these hooky lyrics. Like,
Thank you.
Always laughing, but you never smile. You're always crying, but you never cry. I just love it.
Yeah, it was a friend of mine I wrote about. This friend I used to hang out with, and he was very good at showing no emotion about anything. And it would make me laugh because I was just like, you never get excited, or you never get upset. He was just always like, and I was like, well, are you sure you're a human being? You know,
he's like an android. He's a robot.
So, and then, you know, the interesting thing about that song as well, Pat, is the saxophone solo that's on that. I love saxophone solos. And I always wanted to put one in a song and never felt that we had the right track up until now, until Tonight the Moonlight Let Me Down. That's Michael Monroe from Hannah Rocks playing saxophone.
Really?
Yeah.
That's nice.
Which is great.
You have another guest coming up later on one of the songs.
Absolutely.
And she's great.
Yeah.
And so let me ask you about Christian Martucci. When you bring in a guitarist that has to play with Scott, because they have to do that two guitar attack that Thin Lizzy's famous for and that you guys have incorporated, is there an audition process? I mean, and then Scott has to give the final say, right? He has to,
of course,
get along with this dude. So how did Christian get in the band?
Well, we auditioned here in Los Angeles, and we had about 10 guys come along who were all amazing, all really, really good. And we finished the audition, and we just were like, these guys are great, but we haven't found our guy. We just didn't gel.
Right.
So Jay Rustin, who produced the album, said, do you know Christian Martucci? I said, well, I know he is. He's a guitar player in Stone Sour. I said, well, Stone Sour are finished. They finished the touring cycle. Well, Corey's going back to Slipknot. They're going to be done for the next 3 or 4 years. Christian's looking for a band. He said he's a big Black Star Riders fan.
That's
he's
a
hell of a guitar player. Would you check him out? So I phoned him up and talked to him on the phone and hit it off with him straight away, and we got on really well. And I said, look, you know, I know that you're up there in Oregon. I said, just send down a video of you playing along to something. And he sent down a video of him playing along to a track called Soldier's Town off the Killer Instinct,
yeah,
which is a Scott Gorham riff, and an amazing one. And I just opened up the attachment and watched it and went, this guy's phenomenal. You know, he's just phenomenal. Showed it to the rest of the guys, sent it over to Scott, and Scott's like, what are we waiting for? You know, and Christian's like, do you want me to send some more videos? I'm like, no, you got the gig, it's yours, you know? And then him and Scott got together really for the first time in pre-production, and just hit it off straight away. The vibrato between the two of them is perfect. Yeah. Scott got on with Christian great, and vice versa. They worked really well together. They played their asses off on the record. It was just it was really inspiring watching the two of them just, you know, getting down to it and playing those great solos.
And I gotta assume at some point, like a guy like Christian Martucci, he's probably like, I'm playing with Scott Gorham right now.
That's exactly what he's doing, yeah. You know, Christian's being such a fan. And I what I liked about Christian as well, he's kind of got a similar background to me, as we both come from the punk rock sort of side of things. But Christian can play anything from like Hank Williams to Slayer and everything in between. And he, again, you know, and that, the playing's just part of it. You have to have the personality, because being in Black Star Riders is all about the hang as well. You've got to be able to hang, you've got to be able to be chilled, because we spend so much time on tour buses that you've got to be, you've got to get along. Otherwise, it's pointless,
you know? I would say that in all bands, that should be important.
It should be, but in a lot of bands it isn't, you know? Yeah. I mean, there's always that one or two guys in every band, you're like, God, you know? So, but Christian's chilled, great dry sense of humor, and we all just hit it off with amazing. Again, positivity's there in abundance, attitudes there in abundance. His work ethic is second to none, so we got really lucky.
That's excellent.
You know, because it wasn't going to be easy replacing Damon. We knew that.
Yeah.
And you know, the fact that we did strike gold with Christian is really good.
All right, next track we're going to feature is track two. This is the first song you guys released to the public.
Yes.
And I'm one of these people, when bands I love are releasing songs way in advance of the album, I don't listen to them because I don't want to get sick of that song to when I'm listening to the album that I'm fast-forwarding that one,
right,
jumping it because I've heard it so much.
I know what you mean, yeah.
So the two tracks you guys listened to, I didn't listen to, maybe like a snippet, like 15 seconds,
sure.
Okay.
I understand.
But so this is the title track, Another State of Grace. I'm going to take it from the second verse.
All right.
And this one has a Celtic feel.
Very much so.
And I love the yells of the hey. I love it. So here we go, Another State of Grace.
Here comes the hallelujah men with free love, guns, and dope. The last Irish men in Brooklyn just went up in fire and smoke. Bind our sons to exile to serve the motherland. Keep us all indebted and afraid of Uncle Sam.
Excellent.
Thank you.
Great tune. How do you guys, you got four albums now, how do you choose a set list? I mean, because you know, when the first album came out, you could still throw in a lot of Lizzy songs if you wanted to. Now the Lizzy songs are kind of getting...
There's none.
There's none now.
Nope.
Not in one.
Nope.
All right. Well, you need to know that going in. Like, if you're going to go see you guys and think you're going to hear some Lizzy... No,
we're
not, going.
You're right. We're Black Star Riders.
And after four solo albums.
And 7 years.
Yeah, you're definitely Black Star Riders.
You know, so that was always the intention, if we could keep the band going long enough and, you know, have the success that we hoped we'd have and thankfully have. We were very adamant that we were not just going to, you know, be the band that went out and played three Black Star Riders songs and the rest was Lizzy. You know, and with each album, that obviously has got less and less as we stood on our own. And now after, you know, like I said, 7 years and four albums, you know, we've got, you know, 50 songs to choose from.
Yeah.
And we're, you know, Thin Lizzy are Thin Lizzy, and that's great.
Yeah.
they're amazing. They're doing fine, thank you. But you know, Blackstar Riders now has definitely come into its own.
You've carved out you've carved out your niche. You've earned the right to not play a Thin Lizzy song. Weird as that sounds,
it is. You know, and what a weird sort of situation to be in, having to sort of say, well, we're not playing a Thin Lizzy songs.
Exactly. I mean? Who gets to say that?
It's almost sacrilege. But you know, and the set we just picked the set list for the touring that we're starting next month in Europe, and. Again, we've got certain songs that have to be there that were, you know, big hits over in Europe, you know, like Finest Hour and Killer Instinct and Bound for Glory and Kingdom of the Law, all the songs. So you put those down first and build a set around it. It was a lot of fun, and we're really excited about playing it, you know, and playing I think we're doing 18 songs in the set.
Wow, that's great. I want that tour in the US.
Yeah, me
I
too.
Need that.
I know, right?
How many songs do you go into the studio with? There's 10 songs on the album, but then there's a bonus track that you're going to be able to get on deluxe editions and stuff. But how many songs do you show up to?
We went in with about 17 and cut it down to 11. And it was funny because two of the songs that are on the record were written literally the night before we started pre-production, weren't even on the list. So we would have had 15 songs going in. Scott brought in a song, which we'll get to and I'll explain, brought in a totally finished demo of a song, just needed lyrics and melody. And then I wrote a song literally the night before and showed it to the guys, and they're like, great. And both those songs ended up on the record.
Wow.
So there you go.
But did you record 17 songs?
We didn't.
You didn't?
We recorded 11.
You recorded 11, and that's the 11 that we're hearing.
Yep.
Okay, cool. Because, you know, guys like Springsteen go in with 70 songs.
Oh, I know,
You know, it's insane.
I'd like to. We don't have the time or the money to do that. So we got to sort of be pretty militant about what we're going to record and how much time we have.
How much, like you said, bass and drums recorded together.
Yeah.
How many songs do you guys ever record like all together at the same time? Like on live?
Yeah, that's pretty, you know, this album was a first for us in a lot of ways. Obviously a first to working with Jay Rust and Pat, but we recorded in a process that I'd never done before. And I don't think any of us had, where we did a song a day. Because usually what you'll do is you will go in and you'll play live to get the drum tracks done.
Yeah.
So you'll have your 10 drum tracks. And the bass player, and the drummer will go home. And then the bass player will come in, 10 bass tracks. He'll go home.
Okay.
Two guitar players are left. They do their 10 tracks. They might split. Then it's left for me. I've got 10 vocals to do in 5 days.
Okay.
And it works fine. With Jay Rustin, we did a track a day. So the drums and bass would go down. Then the rhythm guitars would go down. Then whatever lead parts would go down. And then the next morning I'd come in at 10:30, 11, sing the vocal, and we'd move on to the next song. So everybody had to stay. Nobody could go home. Everybody was invested in the record right till the end.
And that's good.
It was amazing. And putting their ideas in. And then you don't have that whole thing going, oh God, I've got, you know, 10 tracks of lead guitar solos to work, you know, or 10 tracks of vocals to do, because you're like, it's done. It's, as you're going along, each song is done. You go back at the end, you can, you know, revise everything and go over it and make some tweaks. But for me, now it's the only way to record. I wouldn't record any other way now.
All right, Jay, it looks like you might be getting a call in 2 more years.
Yep.
Here's track 3. This is the second one you guys released to the public, I believe. Ain't the End of the World. The riff at the beginning of this song sounds a little like Bound for Glory to me.
A little bit.
It's got a little taste of Bound for Glory in there.
Ripping off ourselves.
That's how long you guys have been doing it now. You can actually...
I think that, without doubt, Pat, that's the most signature Black Star Riders song on the record. That's the instantly recognize. You hear
absolutely.
That, you go, that's Black Star Riders. And I'm okay with that. And
sure, that's what you hope for. That people hear something and go, hey, I think that's Van Halen, or that's Aerosmith, or that's Black Star Riders. Sure.
And I think, you know, after four records, we have developed our own sound and our own style. So I'm totally fine with that. Again, you know, that was a song that was written very quickly. Mm-hmm. I write everything on acoustic guitar, and I had the chords and the melody and everything like that. And I took it to Christian Martucci. And Chris and I worked a little bit more on the music, and then brought it into the guys. And Scott and Christian came up with a killer dual guitar harmony hook that you hear at the start and the reintro and everything. And the song just turned out great. You know, it's very catchy. It's very poppy. I'm a big fan of, you know, the 3:30 get it done.
Yeah, and all these songs are you know, there's no like 5 or 6 minute opus on this. It's all
we're all about the song. None of us are into this sort of musicianship. Wankery is, if I can say that word, you know, and no, look at me. We're all, hey, let's make this song really great.
Make a great song. No one needs to noodle for 2 or 3 minutes. No. What is your, when there's a lyric, like, if it ain't the end of the world, it's the end of you and me. When your wife hears lyrics like this, does she ask you, hey, who's this about?
She does sometimes. but you know, again, I sometimes try and disguise stuff. A lot of like Phil Lynott, Springsteen, you mentioned, and Joe Strummer are very good at writing great, what I call rock pop songs, mm-hmm. that you think are very feel goody and just happy, but they're actually about something that's very dark, mm-hmm. and they disguise it really well. And I'm really intrigued by that. We did it on the last album with Dancing with the Wrong Girl. It just sounds like a love song.
Love that
song. Actually about a serial killer.
Yeah.
You know, and I get with Ain't the End of the World, it's actually about dealing with depression and talking to your evil twin, as it were, and saying, I know you're trying to drag me down this dark road. I know you're making me do things that aren't right and aren't good for me and the people around me. I'm done listening to you. If the world's crazy enough as it is and it's falling apart, but if ain't in the world, it's the end of me and you. You're done.
Well, see, this is what I'm not picking up on my few listens so far.
Right. But I disguised it as a love song.
Yeah.
And if somebody says to me, that's what it's about, then that's what it's about.
Yeah.
But to me, that's what I wrote it about. But if somebody gets a different meaning out of it, I love that. I think that's great.
That's the great thing about music.
Absolutely.
I mean, we didn't know that Every Breath You Take was about a serial killer.
Right.
Until Sting said, oh, that's what this is about. You're like, oh, really?
Yeah.
Great song. Great song.
Thank you.
Let's jump into song track 4, Underneath the Afterglow. I'm going to start at about 22 seconds in.
Right on.
This one, I think that you really sound like Phil on this one.
Oh, thanks.
That's me. That's what I'm saying. Let's find out. Good. I love the lyric. Hates a four-letter word, loves a four-letter lie.
Thank you.
Very nice.
Thank you.
Who wrote this one? Who was
it? This is one of the ones I was telling you about. This is the last-minute edition. Okay. Scott Gorham came over to Los Angeles about a week before we started recording. And
he lives in, where is he, London?
He's London. He's been in London for
London
four,
forever.
40
From
years.
Pasadena.
Glendale.
Glendale. Okay.
Glendale Gunslinger.
Okay, that's right.
As we call him. So, Scott came over a few days early and went up to stay with his nephew. His nephew is a guy called Jesse Siebenberg, who's mm-hmm. a very talented musician in his own right. Jesse is the son of Bob Siebenberg, who's the drummer for Supertramp.
Oh, okay.
So Scott stayed up at Jesse's place. Jesse has a studio. And I go to pick up Scott the day before we start pre-production. thinking everything's done for the record and it's all great. And he's like, hey, bud, you know, me and Jesse have been working on this song. I was like, oh, Scott, you can't do this to me. We're starting tomorrow, man, you know. So I was due to take my wife out to dinner that night because I knew I was going to be busy in the studio for next month. And I went home and I said, look, Scott's just given me this idea. And I said, it's phenomenal. I said, I'm going to have to stay in and write some lyrics for it. And she, my wife, bless her, she's very cool. She was like, okay, you know, you owe me. But so I stayed in and I wrote the melody and the lyrics, but I didn't change anything from the demo music that Scott and Jesse had written. So the demo is pretty much, we just went and re-recorded what musically what was on the demo.
Yeah.
And I wrote the lyrics and wrote the melody. And I was listening. I think Scott, when he wrote it, I think he admitted he was listening to a lot of Stevie Winwood, you know, hence the kind of the B3 organ on there and the whole vibe and everything. And I think that was a big influence on Scott. So I think I was trying to sort of, give me Stevie Winwood a sort of humble pie feel off the arrangement. So lyrically, I try to keep that vibe in mind. And basically the whole thing about people that live in the past, it was better in my day. It was much better. No, it wasn't.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't, you know, you just think it was, but it wasn't, you know, and the whole thing, you know, the social media, you haven't posted on your Facebook for 4 days. Are you okay?
Yeah.
Is everything all right? No, I just don't want to post a picture of my breakfast and my cat this morning, you know?
Right.
And it's like, leave me alone. I'm doing okay. You know, don't worry about me. I'm okay living in the present. I'm really good living in the present, you know? So
it's, everyone knows where everyone is 24/7 all the time. It didn't used to be like that.
It's overwhelming. I think the technology thing is great, but I think it's overtaken us as a species and we can't control it anymore.
No.
I think it's way out of hand now.
I mean, and there is great things about it because, you know, we can tweet about this album and we can tweet about tour dates and all kinds of fun stuff. But it's to find a nice, a nice space between.
Well, would you walk up to a stranger in a bar and tell them some of the stuff you see people putting on social media?
No. But
yet you feel okay to put something on social media and let the whole world into your internal problems in your life.
Yeah, yeah.
I have a problem with.
It's difficult.
You know?
Yeah. When you're given the music and you write the lyrics, then you have to take it back to Scott and then he has to like the lyrics too.
Yep.
So that's a lot of pressure.
Sure.
Because he just gave it to you.
Yeah.
And now you got to come up with lyrics immediately.
In fairness to Scott, he was like, hey, he was like, I get it. I know we're starting tomorrow. If you can't, you know, come up with anything, don't worry about it. It's cool. And I went, Scott, this is a really great song.
Yeah.
I said, it'll be a travesty if we don't finish this and get it on the record. And thankfully it sparked an idea straight away. I mean, I've reams of notebooks with lyrics. It's never really, thankfully, been too much of a problem to come up with something. So,
but he doesn't give you a title or anything. You just bring it in and say, okay, this one's now called Underneath the Afterglow.
Yeah. I mean, that's very something I am very precious about in Blackstar Riders, that I have to write the lyrics and I have to write the melody.
Because you're saying them.
You sing them and say them.
Yeah.
That's not to say if one of the guys does bring in something and I get a connection with it, I would certainly put the time and work and effort into making sure it was amazing. But I think they respect that that's where I'm coming from as well. So they don't even really, like, you know, throw words in front of me because they know it's like, I got it, you know, it's okay, you know.
I think everyone always assumes that the front man or the singer always writes the lyrics. That's not really always the case.
Not at all.
And but I think it would be difficult to sing words that you didn't write, that you didn't feel connected to.
It is if you don't feel it. You know, obviously people go, well, how can you sing the Thin Lizzy stuff? It's because that's
you grew up with.
That was the soundtrack of my youth.
Yes.
I connect with everything that Phil...
That was an influence.
That Phil wrote. And like you said, it's an influence. Phil's style of writing and his delivery is a huge effect on me as a musician. So that's different. But yeah, I don't know. It's something that I feel that's what I bring to the band is the lyrics and the melody is my department, you know?
Yeah. Well, you're doing a good job.
Thank you.
Tell me what the Soldier in the Ghetto is about. And then we're going to start it from the top because the intro, the drums, and is it keyboard?
It's called a clav. Yeah. Stevie Wonder used it a lot back in the day.
Who's playing that?
It's Fred Mandel.
Oh, okay.
You know, Fred played, well, obviously, with Queen and
Cooper.
And
everyone.
So Fred came in and played on a few songs. And that was amazing just to have the great man, Fred Mandel, in the studio, seeing him at work. I'm a huge fan of Curtis Mayfield. And that was a huge inspiration for this song.
Yeah, this is a different. This has a different sound than other things you guys have done.
I listen to a lot of Northern Soul and a lot of Motown. It's probably my favorite music, if you pushed me. And it's a big influence on me, you know, like Earth, Wind & Fire, Curtis Mayfield, The Four Tops, The Temptations, you know, all the Berry Gordy stuff. It's just, I just think it's great. The playing on the songs is so great, and the vocal arrangements and the melodies. So I like to bring that into a hard rock band. Mm-hmm. And I think with Soldier in the Ghetto, I came up with a sort of almost Nile Rodgers sort of low funk riff.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Again, took it to Christian and we worked a little bit on it. And Christian came up with, I think, the middle eight section of the song. And then lyrically, I just, you know, it's that whole thing of that blue collar work ethic of being the good guy, trying to do the right thing and just, you know, hitting a brick wall at every turn by legislation or the government, mm-hmm. or not getting a fair shake or not being able to educate your kids,
yeah.
not being able to pay hospital bills. And, you know, where do you go when the world's just getting worse? And we're just, as a species, I feel sadly we're going backwards all the time. And it's really just a rally cry about that and how unfair it is, the system, which doesn't work, by the way.
Yeah, well, we're going to talk more about how the system doesn't work with the next track, but this is Soldier in the Ghetto.
Oh yeah, makes you want to dance, right?
Yeah, it does.
Yeah,
that's cool. And again, that's a little out of the box for what people might think you guys do. If people are trying to pigeonhole you,
yeah,
please know that you guys are really stretching your wings on this album.
What I'm very proud of about Black Star Riders, Pat, is that I feel we're relevant. We're not just, people could call us a classic rock band or whatever they try and pigeonhole us as.
But you're not, because you're a new band. As far as I'm concerned, you're a new band.
And we don't make records for the sake. We have something to say. Mm-hmm. So we use making a record, that's our vehicle to get it out there. And we want to make a social commentary on what's going on in the world or what we feel or what we see.
Yeah.
And we still try and put that into our music as much as we can. So we want to be relevant. We just don't want to be a band that goes out and plays, you know, the hits or the...
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's easy to do.
Yeah.
Like you said, Black Star Riders could have recorded one album, two albums, played a handful of songs, and then the rest Lizzie songs and people, and you guys could make a living and be fine, but you guys don't want to do that.
No.
And that's integrity.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, now this next song, I'm going to try not to get emotional about this one, because we both have young kids.
Yeah.
You have a 12-year-old daughter. Yeah. I have a 14-year-old daughter.
Yeah.
This one really took me by surprise, because I read the title and I in my head I'm like, oh, I think I know where we're going on this one. And as soon as it started, it was the chill song for me, the hair on the back of the neck and, you know, on my arms. I was like, oh man. And the song is called Why Do You Love Your Guns?
Yeah.
And you know, I always make it a point to tell people that we don't talk politics on the show, because I want people to come here to get away from politics.
Understood. Of course.
You guys can fast forward right now if you want, because we have to talk about this.
Well, it's not so much to me, I suppose it is politics, but it's just common sense.
Common sense.
I mean, I obviously the song was inspired by what happened in Newton and Sandy Hook. My daughter was the same age when those little kids were so evilly murdered.
Yeah.
I was over in Belfast actually with Damon Johnson. We'd just done a Warwick Johnson gig in Belfast. We got back to my cousin's house where we were staying that night, and we were in great spirits, and we had a couple of drinks, and his wife starts calling him, and my wife starts calling me, and they're hysterical, and we turn on the news, and you know, obviously the time difference is 1-2 o'clock in the morning over in Ireland, and I just froze. I was just like, this is horrendous.
Yeah.
Surely something has to change. Here we are, 2019,
yeah.
250 mass shootings
yeah.
in this great country of ours, United States of America, which I love, and I love living here.
Yeah. Me too.
It's horrendous.
And this song, you know, when this song started, I was like, oh, this song is a week ago.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It just happened.
So sad. I wish I didn't have to write this song.
Like, I wish the song wasn't relevant, but it's relevant.
I wish I never had to write it, but growing up in Northern Ireland and growing up with gun violence and seeing destruction it's caused, losing my brother-in-law to gun violence as well,
wow.
It's very personal. And I wrote the lyrics right after, I think, Sandy Hook was 2012.
So you've had these for a long time.
I wrote it as a poem, and I put it away just to try and help myself deal with it. And I didn't forget about it, but I just put it in a book of poetry. And when everything was going on this year and nothing had changed, I thought, I got to revisit these words and try and turn it into a song. And musically, the music came within... I mean, the song was done in half an hour.
Yeah.
So it was meant to be. But I'm just... Without getting too political and make, you know... Everybody can quote the Second Amendment. How many people can quote... Or these guys can quote on any of the other amendments?
Yeah, I know.
I keep hearing the Second Amendment stuff. I don't hear it... You know, you ask them, well, what's the Fifth Amendment? Oh, it's plead the Fifth. Well, that's an easy one. Okay, I'm giving you that
okay,
one,
okay,
right?
What's the Seventh Amendment?
Right, you know, yeah. and it's just moronic that innocent kids who should be full of life. I don't know what it's like for your daughter's school. I drop my daughter off at school now, and it's like I'm dropping her off at a prison. There's armed security guards. Mm-hmm. They put a 12-foot-high fence around Beverly High yeah. School now. You know, it's intimidating.
Yeah, my daughter's school is it's up in Simi Valley, and it's wide open. It's not like that. But then that worries me too, because
yeah.
I'm like, this campus is kind of wide open. Anyone could maybe walk on.
Of course.
So, I mean, it's so yeah, you don't want to see armed guards and walls and fences,
no.
But then you don't want to see anything either. It's like, but it should be that way. It should
yeah.
just be able to.
Well, I remember as a kid growing up in Northern Ireland, and we would have bomb scares in our school on a regular basis, and they evacuate the school. And sure, we had the army on the streets and everything, but there wasn't this sort of mass hysteria and paranoia about it. People just got on with it.
Yeah.
No, I'm like you. I'm still like, you know, I want my kid to be, I don't even, would never have dreamed or would have ever had to think about my kid not being safe at school.
Yeah.
But I do on a daily basis. And it just goes down to the whole thing is like, I don't want to take away these people's guns. I want to stop them getting military hardware which no civilian needs.
No, and when people say, not for hunting. And if you say, well, we like to go shoot for target practice, I'm like, well, you're a pretty piss poor marksman if that's what you need.
Well said.
To hit a bottle on a fence.
And just make, you know, let's make it tougher. It's tough to get a car. It's tough to get insurance. It's tough to get your driving license.
Yeah.
It's tough to get a passport. It's tough.
Yeah.
Let's make it tough to get a gun. Let's thorough background checks. Let's make sure there's some mandatory gun training that goes along with that people have to do, like your driving test.
It's just common sense.
It's just common sense. And then you can have your guns.
Yeah.
But let's not make sure that anybody with no background check can walk into a Walmart and walk out with an AK-47 and just go, hey, here I am, let's go.
That's a killing machine. That's a piece, that's,
you know,
they call it an assault weapon. I mean, if you want to shoot that, then join the army.
Yeah, exactly.
My daughter, my 14-year-old, loves the mall, always at the mall.
Yep.
And every time I drop her off now.
It's in the back of your mind, right?
Well, I say it to her. I go, stay together, beware of your surroundings, look around.
Yeah.
And when I'm at a movie theater.
Yeah.
Someone gets up. I'm looking. What's that guy doing? Who's that person? Someone comes in late. What's going on? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Last night I dropped my 18-year-old off to see Rocky Horror, midnight movie. And I'm just like, I mean, I'm not going to stop them from living their lives and having fun. But it is when I told her, you know, I love you and drove away, I was like.
You know, and then we're in a society where we're talking about building walls to keep people out and everything's based on fear. And these shootings are being done by. you know, American citizens, that yeah. people that are here. What are you going to do? You're going to build a wall around them to try and stop them? It's like, it's a farce. And as soon as people wake up to the fact that fear and paranoia and hatred and intimidation doesn't work and hasn't worked since humans walked the earth.
Yeah.
But I don't think as a species we're ever going to get that, because greed and lust and power and money are always going to be at the forefront, you know, of governments. And, you know, I'm getting political. I'm sorry.
I said we can, because this is important. This is lies.
It's just common sense. Yes. I mean, people go, you must be anti-Republican then. I'm not at all.
No,
I'm anti morons,
stupidity,
I mean, and people. You know, I don't care what party you're with, but it'd be a good person.
Yeah, I want everyone to. I want all the politicians to do the right thing. And I wish politicians would not be on Twitter.
I know. Well, that's the worst.
Because, you know, it's funny. Like, they, you know,
devil's keyboard for them. You know what I mean?
Yeah. You can tweet anything. Like right now, I could tweet that I'm at the gym.
Yeah.
I'm not at the gym.
Yeah.
But so you can tweet anything.
It's so believable.
It's so believable. I know.
But I mean, to sort of end it, there was a mass shooting back in the early 90s in Scotland in a town called Dunblane. Same thing. I went to school. The next week, action was taken in the Houses of Parliament to ban all handguns in the United Kingdom. There hasn't been a mass shooting since then.
Yeah.
When we had the shooting last year in New Zealand at the, I believe it was at a mosque, if I remember rightly, New Zealand Parliament that next week took action on gun control. That next
immediately.
Week. Immediately.
I mean, it doesn't, you know? I mean, if you look at the list of, you know, mass shootings, like.
And all we get are thoughts and prayers. I'm sending thoughts and prayers.
You know what?
You can stick your thoughts and prayers up your ass.
Up your ass.
That's not going to change.
Not doing anything.
You know?
And I laugh when I said that, but you know what I mean. I'm not. It's not funny, but I agree with you.
It's horrific, you know?
It's terrible. Well, let's...
Anyway.
Hey, track six. No, this is called Why Do You Love Your Guns?
I woke up sad. The sun was shining, the coffee and lightning, the birds were singing, but I woke up sad. I woke up scared, feel my heart beating, if seeing is believing, hope that I'm still dreaming, I woke up scared.
That's a beautiful song.
Thank you.
Great tune.
Thank you.
I mean, after Parkland and those, I mean, I really, you know, those kids are still out there, you know, and they're of voting age now.
I know.
So, you know.
There's hope.
Get out there and vote.
There's always hope.
But, you know, the line, everything is broken. It does feel like that sometimes.
Yeah, it really
it
does.
It really does.
No, I just don't understand why nothing is being done. Well, I do, but I think it's, you know, it's like, if it's innocent little kids, what the hell is it going to take, you know?
Yeah, because no one had a Democrat or Republican shirt on at Sandy Hook.
They're kids.
It was everyone. It's claiming everyone.
You know, who still haven't discovered what life's all about, and to have it taken away so cruelly from them, it's just horrific, you know?
Yeah, it's tough.
Yeah.
It's really tough. Let's just jump it right into, you know, let's cleanse the palate with this just straight ahead rocker. In the Line of Fire, though, I mean, we're talking about guns. What's In the Line of Fire about lyrically?
Well, it's nothing to do with guns, thankfully.
Yeah.
So it's more a metaphor for putting yourself out there and just, you know, taking life by the scruff of the neck and just living your life and being as righteous as you can be and taking the flack that goes with it, you know, and I think just it's a celebration of life. It's a positive song, yeah. You know. It's just, hey, life can be really good.
And take a chance.
Take a chance, and yeah, exactly.
Like all singers love to sing the word fire.
It's sing just like fire. Yeah, yeah. You think of Ian Asprey and James Hetfield when you yep. when you say that word.
Yeah, yeah. Or Brian Johnson from AC/DC. All that stuff is great.
That's a great Robert Crane riff. Robbie brought that in. Mm-hmm. And
There's some great bass riffs on this album.
Yeah, he played his ass off on this record. He's, like I said, he's my favorite bass player in the whole world. So he brought that one in, and it was just straight up rocker, and we just treated it that way.
So you, Robbie, and Scott, you're the veterans of the band now.
You guys, we're the old men in the band.
Yeah. So the next song, What Will It Take? This features Pearl Adey.
Yep.
And she was on the last album, Testify or Say Goodbye.
That's right.
She's killer vocalist.
Yep.
What's her?
She's Meatloaf's daughter. Married to Scott Ain.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And from Anthrax.
They must live. I live in Woodland Hills. They must live out there somewhere because I see those
right
two.
That direction, yeah.
Yeah, I see those two at Target a lot.
Yeah, yeah.
And you can't miss Scott Ian.
Yeah,
no,
with Scott's
that,
great
with that chin, yeah. With the chin beard. He's you can't miss him.
Yeah, so he's awesome.
But yeah, Pearl is a killer singer.
Very much so.
I'm gonna start this at a minute 10, and then we're gonna jump to near the end so that we can really hear her.
Sounds good.
Go at it. But this is What Will It Take. I love the sentiment of the song. This is about winning back someone or rekindling your current romance. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yeah. I mean, not even just romance. It's just that thing when you get into that argument with somebody or your discussion with somebody and they're so stonewalled and blinkered that they just can't see the light, or they can't see that, mm-hmm. that they're in the wrong, or they won't admit that they're in the wrong, or you can't get them to change. It could be about racism, it could be about world politics, it could be about love.
Yeah.
It's that whole, hang on a minute, the way you're looking at this isn't the right way. Can you try and see it from a different perspective? And they refuse to see anybody else's opinion or idea or ideal but their own, you know?
So what will it take to make you see things differently?
Yeah.
All right, here we go.
Why will it take for me to set you free? Why will it take? Can we reciprocate? What will it take? What will it take? What does it take to change your point of view? What does it take to stop this world from being cruel? What does it take? Can we cooperate? What does it take? What will it take? I think it's gonna take a miracle.
All right, I'm going to fade it down. I'm going to take it to near the end so we can hear a little bit more
Pearl in action.
Must be fun to have guests come into the studio.
It's great. I love it.
So cool.
Really love it. Yeah, certainly when they're of the quality of Pearl. It's amazing. That song was written, again, on the eve of pre-production. One of those things where I picked up the guitar and started strumming thing and a melody came. And again, an hour the song was written. And I knew it was different. And I thought, maybe this isn't right for Black Star Riders. Mm-hmm. and I wasn't going to show it to the guys because it is a little bit different for us.
Yeah,
it's very sort
sure.
of Americanish in its delivery and the whole thing. And went in and just sat down and played it for them. And they were like, no, we got to record this. So I was like, okay. And instantly when we sort of were putting it together, we thought, this is the song we got to get Pearl on. And you know, what's different for us is, you know, there's Rickenbacker guitars used on that. Scott's playing some amazing picking stuff on there. Mm-hmm. You know, Christian's got the vibrato sound going on his guitar. So they really embraced it and took it to a whole new level. And it's a testimony to those guys. Because I was like, I don't think this is right for Black Star Riders. And I was almost like, it isn't, you know. And they were like, no, it is. We're going to do it, you know. So fair play to them, you know.
I love that you're it's just a couple of days before you're going to record, but you it's just in you. You can't stop yourself.
It's like last minute Christmas shopping, you know. Yeah. You're like
you picked up the guitar.
Yeah,
you're like, you can't stop yourself from doing
exactly,
it.
Exactly. Yeah.
And then you're like, oh no, now we have another.
I know, right?
Man, there's worse things to have than another song.
Yeah.
But and that one made it.
Yeah.
So
it did.
Excellent.
Thank you.
Okay, In the Shadow of the War Machine, track 9.
Yeah.
This is a rocker. What's this about?
This is one of the first songs I actually wrote after we finished Heavy Fire. Again, listening to a lot of soul, listening to Edwin Starr, I think inspired this with the groove and everything that we've got going on there. And I think it's self-explanatory. You know, we're all living in the Shadow War Machine. When I was writing this, the whole North Korean thing was very much at its height. And you know, obviously, and Syria was full on as well. And there's just every time you turn on the news, it was just war. As it always is. And again, it's like you're trying to get through life best you can and be happy and find some serenity and some nirvana and some peace. And it's not an easy thing to do when, you know, we have people running the world that are intent and killing each other all the time.
It doesn't make sense. It doesn't. It kind of doesn't make any sense.
Why is it that hard? It just shouldn't be that hard. I don't know. Maybe I'm just turning an old hippie in my old age. But
no, I think you know, deep down everyone feels that way.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like God. Can you imagine if we let our young daughters watch the news, they would be petrified.
Well, I just think it's the whole thing is: are these politicians actually watching what's going on with the common man and common woman in the world and how tough it is to put your kids through college, mm-hmm. get healthcare, get a job, pay for your, you know, kids today, when we were kids, we didn't have to worry about paying for a laptop or a phone.
Mm-mm, no.
You know, kids, that's why kids don't want to leave home anymore because they're like, well, hang on a minute. You know, our day you could get a job, put some money aside, get on the property ladder.
Yeah.
And you had a chance at life. It's almost impossible for kids to do that now, you know, because everything's so expensive and
it's nuts.
You know, it's nuts, you know.
The my brother goes crazy. He's about 5 or 6 years older than me, and he's like, no kids are ever outside playing anymore. No one's playing baseball. No one's running around.
Yeah.
And it is, and I laugh at him, but then I look around, I'm like, oh, he's right.
He's right, but you know, we would, if we had that technology when we were kids, we'd be doing the same thing.
We'd be doing
you can't
the exact
blame
same
them
thing.
For what they have, but everybody is a slave to their phone. Everybody's walking around staring at their phone now, and it's just...
Well, how do you feel when you're on stage and you look out and everyone has their phones
doesn't
down?
Bother me.
That doesn't bother you if they're taking videos
all.
And
no,
stuff.
Please.
That's cool.
I think that's totally cool. I get it. I get why it annoys me. What annoys me is when you do get that one person that comes to the show and holds the iPad up. The whole show.
The iPad. It's ridiculous.
The whole show. The iPad. Yeah. I mean, I've had it where the guy's in front of me and he's the whole show. And it's like, I get it. You want to take a picture or you want to film a minute of a song.
Yeah.
But the whole show. And that starts to really piss me off.
It cracks me up too, because I can, sometimes a person will be in front of me and they'll be videotaping something or they'll be taking a picture and I can see what they're seeing.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you're never going to look at that again.
No. And
it's a waste of time.
And then they put it up on YouTube and the sound quality is terrible and you get people going, oh, the band sound terrible. Of course they do.
Of course they do. It's
you know,
through the phone speaker.
It's trial by YouTube, as I call it. And it's not fair. But I don't mind people bringing, listen, I think if they're taking photographs or a little bit of video and they're spreading the word about your band mm-hmm. and about your music, I'm all for it.
So funny, when we were kids, if we went to see a concert and we took a camera with us, they'd confiscate
That's
it.
That's right.
Now everyone has a camera.
Yeah, I know.
All right, here we go. Track 9, In the Shadow of the War Machine.
Junior started school today in the shadow of the war machine. Renters doing the bills to pay in the shadow of the war machine. Mm-hmm.
Very nice.
Thank you.
It's, yeah, like when we're talking about politicians, are they looking around? Are they seeing what's going on? I still can't believe that people in Flint, Michigan don't have clean water to drink. That doesn't make any sense to me.
We seem to be spending all this money needlessly everywhere but on our own people in this country.
Yeah.
You know, there's so many, so much injustices. There's so many homeless people here in the streets of Los Angeles.
It's really rough.
It's, what, 35,000 or something last count? And like you said, the Flint, Michigan thing, and obviously the gun control. I mean, there's no reason why anybody should be hungry in the United States of America.
It's very difficult to see homeless people because I feel helpless. I don't know what to do.
Yeah.
I mean, I've given people a couple bucks, you know, whatever here and there, but I know that doesn't fix the problem. And
of course.
I know it doesn't. Yeah. I don't even know if it helps, but it's. I just don't know what to do about it. It's a real helpless thing.
And then again, the way we treat our veterans coming back from war and stuff like that, and they don't get the help that they need, mm-hmm. or they don't get a job or the security that they deserve for giving us their service. I mean, let's invest in us.
Yeah.
Let's invest in the country that we live in. You know,
when I was a kid, I thought that if you went into the Army, Navy, whatever it was, and you came back, you were taken care of.
Yes. Yep.
For your whole life.
Yep.
That's what I thought. That's how it should be.
Absolutely.
And so when in my older age, I find out that that's not the case at all. It was kind of shocking.
Yeah.
I'm like, what are you talking about?
It's a travesty.
There's a homeless vet. That's not a thing.
Yeah. It shouldn't be allowed to happen.
Yeah. Unbelievable. Let me ask you this. This album is sequenced mm-hmm. perfectly.
Thank you.
How much time does it take sequencing an album? You have these 10, 11 songs. Now you got to decide what order they're going to be played in. Is this all the producer? Is it by committee?
It's all of us. It's all of us. It's the producer, our management, everybody that's in the band, everybody mm-hmm. that's close to the band.
Okay.
We'll send them the stuff and go, what's your opinion? And it's all taken into consideration. But again, we sequenced it like you would an album. We were very conscious of a side one and a side two.
Okay.
So we wanted side one to end with Soldier in the Ghetto, and then we wanted the ballad, Why Do You Love Your Guns, to start side two.
Okay.
And I still think that's the best way to sequence a record, you know, regardless of what format it's coming out in. So that, we certainly had that at the forefront of our thinking when we were putting the songs together. But we're quite a democratic band, and nobody really gets too precious about anything. And in fairness, we all, when we sort of wrote our list, a lot of us were in the same ballpark. Let's put it that way.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, the last song, the song that ends the regular edition of the album, is Poison Heart. Then I'm going to talk about bonus track and how it's decided, that kind of. But this is Poison Heart. This is track 10. If you're buying the regular edition of the album tomorrow, September 6th, this was the last track on it. Here we go.
You got a poison heart.
Who's that second voice there? Is that you also?
That's me, yeah.
It's you.
I don't think I've sung that high in years.
No, because you sound different. Because I thought, I wonder if this is...
No, it's me.
This is one of the other guys.
It's right up there. Myself and Jay spent quite a while. That was probably the vocal that took the longest because we changed the melody while we were actually recording it.
Okay.
And messed about with it quite a bit. And I'm really happy with the end result. But Jay was like, you know, you can get up there. I was like, I don't think he's like, come on, you can do it. So, you know, apparently I can, just about.
How long did it take to record this album?
It took 3 weeks.
3 weeks.
3 weeks.
And what's the, how many hours a day are you in? How much studio time do you have per day?
No, nothing crazy. We would start at about 11:30.
Okay.
Do a little bit, break for lunch about one, get something to eat, get back at it again, you know, 1:30, one, sort of 1:45. And we'd work till about 9 at night.
All right. That's not bad.
You know?
Is there, when's the voice, what part of the day is the voice ready to be recorded?
For me, it's the first thing in the morning.
First thing in the morning.
Yeah,
so when you get to the studio, you're ready.
I'm straight in there. I mean, I'm very much a morning person. I like getting up early.
Me too.
And you know, it's my favorite part of the day is the mornings. And I get most of my ideas. I do most of my writing.
Because you're alone. No one else might up at that time.
I just feel good. I've got energy. I'll drop the kids at school, maybe go to the gym for an hour, come back, start writing. And then by sort of 3 or 4, that's when I'm starting to get tired and the fatigue's coming in.
Maybe take a nap.
You know, I've never been one of these rock and rollers that stays up till 4 or 5 in the morning.
Right.
I mean, I've tried it and it doesn't work for me. So
no,
what works for me
doesn't
is,
really work for anyone.
Is getting in there first thing and I feel good. So that's when I like to sing.
Are there any preparation you do for your voice? Is there anything you don't eat or drink or anything like that?
I had to change my diet just recently, about 8 or 9 months ago for some health reasons. So I don't drink caffeine anymore.
Okay.
I don't eat red meat anymore. And I don't eat dairy anymore.
Wow. That's a lot. That's a big change.
Big change. I mean, that was nothing to do. It was cause I had to, I just had some stomach issues that I had to address and, I feel much better for it.
All right.
Much better for it. You know, I'm not the odd throat pastel and some warm ups and that's about it. Ready to go, you know?
I had one more question about the recording. I can't remember. All right, so a bonus track.
Yeah.
How do you decide what song is going to be the bonus track? Because you don't want it. Because this is a great song. This next song, "Candidate for Heartbreak," is a great song. So it's like immediately when it's a bonus track, people think, well, wasn't it good enough to be on the album? But that's certainly not the case with this song. How do you decide which song is relegated if you're going to do a bonus track or B-side or whatever you want to call it?
You know, it's funny. That's a great point you're making because when that song was decided, our radio pluggers over in the UK who are great and have a lot of success with us on the BBC over there, you know, we've been playlisted a lot, which is huge. They thought the song could be a single.
And here we
are putting it as the bonus track.
Yeah.
Record label and management kind of called it because I was kind of like, I was at the point where like, I don't know. I love them all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right.
I said, you know, pick one and I'll argue with you if I definitely don't think it is. And I knew something had to be the bonus track and they just went for this track called Candidate for Heartbreak. And I was like, okay, if it has to be, okay, you know. I wasn't happy about it, but I understood that they needed a bonus track for different formats.
Right.
So I think we were all just like, okay, whatever at this point, you know what I mean? You know,
yeah,
we'll let you decide, and then if it goes wrong, we can blame you,
right?
You know,
and Heavy Fire, that Fade is an amazing song.
Yeah,
love that song too. So you know, get whatever format you can get, but we'll give you a taste of this, and then you'll say, well, now I got to track that down.
Right.
So here's a Candidate for Heartbreak.
I'll make all the last out truthful, manipulate the beautiful. All I need is your approval to change the constitution. How reality just hit me, gravity just quit.
I remember my question.
All right.
The other thing I wanted to ask you is, as a musician, other than obviously when you're playing live, but when a new album is ready to come out and it's recorded and it's done, is this the most exciting time for you as a musician?
Yes, very much so.
Because you're excited for people to hear this.
Yeah,
stuff.
You really are. You're excited to get it out there and see the reaction.
Mm-hmm.
You're excited to play the new songs live.
Yeah.
I mean, I love this part of it. I really do.
And well, you guys nailed it. This
Thank
is a
you.
Great album,
Thank
top
you.
To bottom. You guys have been hearing snippets for this whole show. So now tomorrow, which will be September 6th, Yes. When you're hearing this, go buy this album. We be able to get it everywhere. You can pre-order it on Amazon. Yeah. And the day that yeah. we're recording, it'll be on iTunes.
It'll be everywhere.
Go to Nuclear Blast. Everywhere you get music, you can get it.
Yes.
What do we do? What else do we do to get the word out there? What else do you guys do?
I mean,
you guys are going to be doing radio and yeah, all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, we've got a fairly heavy promo schedule coming up. I know we're doing a lot of radio.
You and Robbie have been doing YouTube yeah. videos talking about
Robbie
the
and
album.
I've been doing that. Scott's been doing a bunch of stuff as well. I know he's got a lot of radio stuff coming up to do here in the United States. As much as we possibly can.
Yeah, yeah, obviously, that,
that's
obviously.
That's all. We're up, pretty much up for anything that will spread the word and get it out there. I think we've got to get back over here early next year and start doing some dates.
So 2020.
Yeah.
All right. And when does the tour start in the UK?
It starts October 10th in Bristol in England. And we go right through to the end of November. We UK mm-hmm. and then into Europe right up to the end of November. December we have off. And then next year will be, other parts of the world, hopefully, definitely United States of America, hopefully get back to South America, Japan, mm-hmm. Australia, probably, and then all the European festivals next summer.
So are you in, you're in town till October?
I'm not. I'm actually leaving to go to the UK to do some more promo in September for about 10 days.
Okay, cool. Yeah. Obviously. And then how much rehearsal do you guys do before that first gig?
We're doing 3 days. Which isn't a lot, but no. We'll probably play 4 or 5 songs from the new record, mm-hmm. and the rest will be obviously songs from the other albums.
Right.
So we know those, hopefully. We're pretty good about doing our homework. So when we do get together, because we do live all over the place, so we can't just get together, drop a hat, and rehearse.
Right.
So when we do get together, we should hopefully all be on the same page and have the stuff learned, and it's just repetition running over it and getting out there and seeing how it goes.
All right. Well, when this album comes out, I'll pick up a couple copies to give away to the listeners. Maybe
Thank
I can
you.
Hook up with you and
of course.
Get your. I'll come to close to you and
no,
you can
no
sign
problem,
them.
Pat.
And no, but I'm always talking about Black Star Riders.
Thank you.
I'm always talking about it on the show. I appreciate you. You got me and Kyle great seats for that Judas Priest show.
I'm glad you enjoyed it. That was a great show that night.
It was an amazing show, yeah. And we had phenomenal seats. Like when we got cool. those tickets in our hand, I was like. Ricky did us a solid.
well, you guys deserve it because you guys are great. So thank you.
But totally appreciate it. Totally love Black Star Riders. This album is, again, you've continued to just better yourselves.
Thank you.
Best yourselves. And that's difficult because you guys have set the bar so high. And I, as a music fan and listener, I appreciate it.
Yeah.
So we've played all the songs on the album. Where can we find you? Where you got website, Twitter, all that stuff?
Yeah, all that stuff. I'm on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, the website, everything. Black Star Riders on Ricky Warwick as well.
Yeah, Black Star Riders has a great website. You can get merch there, t-shirts.
Yep,
you guys got great t-shirts.
Thank you.
It's very cool. So what I'm going to play us out with is the last time you did the show, 2015, and again, we've been talking about Thin Lizzy so much and how you guys aren't playing Thin Lizzy anymore.
Right.
But you sat here and you played for me and Kyle on acoustic guitar. You played Jailbreak for us. And it was so fucking awesome.
Thanks, man.
Because first of all, I don't know how you just pick up the guitar and sing for two other dudes.
Right.
And you gave it your all.
Thank you.
So I want people to hear that. If they didn't hear you the last time you were on the show, I want them to hear this acoustic version played right here in this room of Jailbreak. Thank you very much for being
Thank
here.
Thank you, Pat, as ever.
Giving
Thank
me
you.
Your Sunday.
Thank you.
And everyone go buy Another State of Grace tomorrow. Here we go, Jailbreak.
Tonight there's gonna be a jailbreak somewhere in this town. See me and the boys, we don't like it. So getting up and going down. Hiding low, looking right and left. You see us coming, I think it's best. You move away, do you hear what I say from under my breath? Tonight there's gonna be a jailbreak. Don't you be around. Tonight there's gonna be trouble.
Some of us won't survive. See the boys and Mimi in business. We'll sit out dead or alive. I can hear the hound dog on my tail. All hell breaks loose, alarming sirens wail. Like the game, if you lose, go to jail. Tonight there's gonna be a jailbreak somewhere on this town. Tonight there's gonna be a jailbreak. There's gonna be trouble. Gonna find myself in. Tonight there's gonna be trouble. So woman, you stay with a friend. You know it's safe. Yeah, it's a jailbreak.
Amazing.